This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com. La ilaha illallah.
Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. May Allah's peace and blessings be on each and every one of you. I'd like to welcome you, dear viewers, to another in our series, The Best of Tawheed. In this series, we're looking at the best evidences to support the correct understanding of Tawheed in Islam. The proper knowledge of Tawheed is essential to ensure that our worship is legitimate, that Allah would accept it from us, because we're doing it the way that He had prescribed for us to do it. And we're not doing it the way that satanic forces have introduced, which violate and contradict the essential principles of worshiping God alone, which is the basis of our declaration of faith, La ilaha illallah, there is no God worthy of worship but Allah. So we have been looking at that and looking at also the various common ways in which the principles of Tawheed from these aspects are violated. We looked at charms and omens, how this involves depending on other than Allah, believing that a charm, a bracelet, a necklace, an object has the power to prevent evil and to bring good. That is the realm of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. He is the one who can do that. So when we depend on a charm, we have given the attributes of Allah to His creation. Similarly, omens, where people take from animal movements, birds, variety of incidents which happen in the home, breaking of mirrors, spilling of salt, signs of bad or good to come. By attributing the coming of good or the coming of bad, evil, to these incidents is to give again what is in the realm of Allah to His creation, where the events have taken place. That is why the Prophet, may God's peace and blessing be upon him, on one occasion, when there was a lunar eclipse, which occurred on the same day that his son Ibrahim died, the people felt that this eclipse was the consequence of the death of his son. So he called the people together and told them that lunar eclipse or solar eclipse, these natural phenomena which take place have nothing to do with human lives and human affairs. They are signs from God. They are not the result of what happens among us. So he clarified, removed that thought from their mind because of the coincidence of the eclipse happening on the same day that his son died. So this is the point that we don't take from events which happen in our lives signs of impending good or impending evil, what we call good luck or bad luck. There is no such thing. Whatever happens is in accordance with the will of Allah. Nothing happens without His will. And that's why the Prophet, may God's peace and blessing be upon him, frequently used to say, La hawla wa la quwwata illa billah. There is no movement, no power, except with the permission of Allah. Now, what we have been looking at in terms of the practices and principles which are common in the world today, which violate this principle of Tawheed, is magic. We looked previously before that at astrology, and before that at fortune telling, before that yet at the charms and the omens, etc. Magic, we looked at in our previous episodes, and from magic we went into magic related area where the magician is involved in calling on the jinn and agreeing with it, entering into a contract with it, that it would do certain things in this world for whatever is requested of the magician, of sacrilege and inviting other people to sacrilege. So when this occurs, people are touched by the evil elements of this world. That touch can go to the level of actual possession. So we have seen and we've discussed in our previous session that the symptoms of possession may look like medical symptoms also, common medical symptoms which are known, epilepsy, you know, split personalities, bipolar disorders, etc., etc. A variety of names have been given to it in the medical profession. Though mostly these are names without understanding what's actually going on. There's a body that can be treated, and there's a body that just doesn't seem to be treatable. In that area of the untreatable, we find that those who have involved themselves in what is called ruqya, reciting the Quranic verses that the Prophet ﷺ prescribed over people who are suffering, that these people have been cured. You know, what seemingly miraculously, they have been cured. I've myself seen cases of it where psychiatrists were unable to do anything with an individual, and due to the reading of Quran over this person continually, he started to get better. And the only thing the psychiatrist could say was, just keep doing whatever you're doing. You know, it's working. And sure enough, this individual who had reached the point of a vegetative state, he had to be carried, put in a wheelchair to be brought for treatment. He was in the psychiatric ward in Doha here. And the psychiatrist said, we can't do anything more for him. They gave him medicines and it just became worse. Nothing they could do could benefit him. So they had to stop giving him the medicines. They just gave him small doses just to sedate him. That's all they could do. When he was read over on a continual basis, he improved to the point that he's now back in work. Nobody could have imagined that he could have been in that vegetative state and made it out of it to normalcy again. I mean, when I saw him, and I've seen other cases, I thought this was a hopeless case. He was gone. There was no coming back. He'd gone beyond the point of no return. But Allahu Akbar, with the recitations, etc., he came back to normalcy. So we have this treatment of Quranic recitation is referred to as ruqya, recitations over people who are apparently possessed or having spiritual illnesses. And of course, you know, the Quran describes itself as being shifa'un lima fi sudur, as a cure for what is in the hearts. It could be a cure from a psychological perspective, or it could be a cure from a spiritual perspective. I mean, Allah doesn't define how that cure takes place. But we know It should be within the realm of what the Prophet ﷺ did. Because you have some people, when people are brought to them in these states, etc., they will take Quranic verses and they will write it on a plate in saffron. They'll get saffron, like ink, and write Quranic verses. Then they will pour water on it and give it to the person who is possessed or whatever to drink it. We say, well, where did that come from? Well, you know, Allah said in the Quran that the Quran is a cure. So, but it doesn't mean cure meaning you do whatever you want to do. We already said that, you know, to take the Quran and roll it up and put it in a locket and wear it around your neck, this is not legitimate. It's not going to cure anything. You know, it's just like taking a prescription which the doctor gives you for your illness, rolling it up into a ball and putting it in a pouch and tying it around your neck, thinking you're going to get cured from that. It's not going to happen. So, what are we dealing with here? This treatment should have some parameters. It's not a free-for-all, that once we say this person has been possessed, we can do anything. Anything that will work, we'll do it. This is not the correct way Islamically. Now we're going to take a brief break before coming back to look at what is legitimate and what is illegitimate. So we will see you after the break. Assalamu alaikum. Welcome back from the break. Now before the break, we were looking at other methods that people have developed for dealing with humans, Muslims, who are seemingly possessed. We spoke about the fact that the Quran is a cure. And the Prophet ﷺ taught us recite the last two quls. He gave us Ayatul Kursi. The Sahaba used the Fatiha and he approved it. This is what we have. He also gave du'as, we mentioned before, Adhib al-Ba's Rabbin Nas, and other du'as which involve ruqya, Bismillahi arqiq min kulli da'in yu'dhik, for example. In the name of Allah, I recite over you to cure you from whatever is harming you. You know, this du'as like this the Prophet Muhammad ﷺ taught. So the point is that we have a clear body of practices which the Prophet, may God's peace and blessings be upon him, prescribed. Now, we have practices that people have begun and now become commonplace where they're claiming that we're curing with the Quran. The example I gave prior to the break was that of writing out a Quranic verse, say the same Fatiha or the same quls, whatever, in saffron, right? Expensive. Make it like ink and then write with it. And then pour water on top of it and then give it to people to drink. And they drink it. We say, what is that? Where do you stop with this, you know? Shall we also take dough? And, you know, you have this like the bakers, they'll put the dough in different shapes. You can squeeze it out slowly and write a verse from the Quran, then cook it and eat it. Where do we go? Where are the limits for all of this? The limits have to be what the Prophet ﷺ did and what he didn't do. We need to stay with what he did. So other practices where people are now reciting Quran and blowing it on bottles of water, you know, on oil, you know, Zaytun, you know, the virgin olive oil, blowing on it, reciting on it. You know, you can go to Islamic stores where they're selling, you know, black seed, of course, is recommended by the Prophet ﷺ. They're selling honey, wonderful. Then they also will have bottles. You know, they say this bottle was recited on by, you know, Sheikh so-and-so. He recited over it. It costs so much. Here's another bottle, it was recited by another sheikh, imam, so-and-so of this. And here's another bottle. So it's like you're going to a pharmacy, you know, and they're pulling medicines for you. Where do we get this from? We have no example of the Prophet ﷺ doing that. or of the Sahaba doing it. Yes, later on people did it, and you know, it seemed to work, and some people said, well, okay, since it works, we can do it, you know. But we got to understand also that there is a psychological element here. Some people, when a person comes to them and they say, I'm possessed, etc., they will say, okay, you know, look at your foot. You stretch your foot out and then their foot starts to shake. See that? That's where the possession starts. It comes in your big toe. Then it works its way up your foot. So they chase it up your body, up your foot, until your head, until your hair. They take up some of your hair, cut it off, put it in a bottle, and they burn the hair. And they say, ah, we've burnt the jinn. And you see people who are in this state, and this happens, and they feel, it's gone. And they feel themselves cured. And they seem to be cured. So I said, this becomes a method. We put it in our list of things that we can do. But this is psychological. You know, we know very well in the medical profession, you know, where you can, when they're testing medicines, what do? They have a control group. One group which they give the medicine to, pills, for example. Then the other group, they give them sugar pills. They tell them it's the same medicine. And you will find every time that they do this, the people who are taking sugar pills will get cured with that medicine. As the people from the medicine are cured, who are actually taking the medicine, people who are taking sugar pills are also cured. Now, if they see that the people taking the sugar pills, their cure rate is almost as good as that of the medicine, they say this medicine is not good. It's just psychological. So it's only when the medicine is bringing like 80%, 75% cure, and then the placebo, they call it, or the sugar pill, is bringing like 25%, they say, okay, 75% means this is really working. 25. But if you see 25, 30% in both cases, you say this pill is useless. So why they know that? Because half of the treatment, they'll tell you, is your faith in the doctor. You believe the doctor is going to cure you. That is enough in certain cases to actually cure you. That whatever they've done after that didn't do anything. It was just your faith in the doctor. So we know that this psychological element is there. And many cases of what people think to be possession are not really possession. Even amongst the others, like the Christians and that, Catholics, I remember reading some articles, you know, written by those who are engaged in this on a basis, real-time basis. They're saying maybe only 5 to 10% of the actual cases that come to them are real possession. The rest of it is psychological things happening with people. It tends to be more among women than among men. And, you know, so much of it is problems in the family that are brought out in this way and that way, and it's not possession at all. You know, the greater proportion of it. So we have to beware of those who are selling the deen, actually, because it becomes a business, selling the deen, you know, for this price. It's really not fair, and people need to know what constitutes treatment of possession from a Quran and Sunnah perspective, and what does not. Now, we have another issue that we raised earlier, whereby we find people possessed among Hindus, among Christians, for example. And they go to their priests. And the priests will do different things. In the case of the Catholics, they will hold up a cross. They'll read the, you know, the Roman ritual. And, you know, they'll make burn incense, they'll walk around them, and they'll say this and get out in the name of Christ and all these other things, and people get better. And they're cured. Some cases, it may be that psychological thing. Other cases, it may very well be, because we have to, how do we explain it happening for the Christians? The Hindus also do it, and their people get cured too. And then Muslims do it, and they get cured. So when you look at it all, you start to question, well, is there any reality to this? Or is it all psychological? Well, reality is that it isn't all psychological. there is an element which is actually involved in the jinn. But why would Christian, who is following idolatry, he's calling on the wrong God, because Jesus isn't God, or a Hindu is calling on Shiva or Vishnu, which is not God also, and yet people are also cured. When you call on Allah, and your people are cured just as their people are cured. So how do you explain that? Well, the point is that in the case of the person who is treated with the Quran, the jinn will leave because the Quran has that impact on the individual, which will drive out demonic sources or demonic entities from a person. In the case of the reading of the Roman ritual of the Catholics and Protestants, or also many evangelicals are involved in this, and the Hindus, in their case, the possession of the individuals was a means of drawing people into further shirk, further elements of idolatry, which affirms for them that their faith is in fact correct. So when the shirk, the idolatry, is done in the presence of a person who has been possessed, the possessing jinn may leave that person. The person seems to be cured, while shirk has been used to cure that individual. So one of the goals of demonic intervention into our world is to draw people into shirk, into idolatry, by one way or another. So that has been accomplished when the shirk is mentioned over that person who is possessed. The demon leaves and the people see that person cured, then that convinced them that Jesus is God, Vishnu is God, whatever. So in the case of the Islamic side, it is the actual Quran which drives them out. This is the reality that we should understand with regards to possession from the Islamic perspective. And whether we're treating magic or we're treating possession, it should be utilizing what the Prophet, may God's peace and blessing be upon him, had prescribed for us. We stay within those realms and avoid the extremes which are now very common in different parts of the Muslim world. So with that, dear viewers, we'd like to thank you for being with us in this segment of our series, The Best of Tawheed. And we hope to see you in coming segments, inshallah. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Islamic Online University prevents you with the golden opportunity to study the various branches of Islamic studies from the comforts of your home. Now, you get to study at your own time schedule and at a pace that suits you best. IOU is the brainchild of Dr. Bilal Phillips, who envisioned an institution that would offer undergraduate and postgraduate courses online and completely tuition-free.
Choose from the widest range of programs that you can ever imagine. Bachelor's in Islamic Studies, Intensive Arabic Program, Global Quran Memorization Program, Bridge to Master's in Islamic Studies, Bachelor's, Certificate, and Diploma in Psychology, Education, Islamic Finance, Business Administration, and Information Technology, and The Crown, Master's in Islamic Studies.
Our syllabus is based on the bachelor's degree program of Madinah University, Om Durman Islamic University, Al-Azhar University, and other reputable Islamic institutions. Your journey to acquire Islamic knowledge is just a click away.